Please disregard the previous hour of useless audio. This has been a production of the Magical Talking Hands Podcast. If you would like to contact us,
completely overrun by
it, do so at the Magical Talking Hands.
There are gmail.com.
Our music is provided courtesy of Jay Underberg.
This
more of his PodSafe audio can be found at PodSafeAudio.com.
Middle-aged white guys from Middle America.
Thank you.
Talk about random shit for about an hour or so. This is the Magical Talking Hat.
Wouldn't it be cool if we did this so long that I actually became middle-aged and then it would be, like, appropriate?
Well, then what'll I be?
Middle age lasts for a while.
Oh, okay.
So you used to be. Hello, and welcome to the Magical Talking Hat, the podcast that was living downstairs from you in that first apartment that you had right after college. You know, the crappy one with the roaches. That was us downstairs. Yes, with the loud music. That was us. I am Tony.
And I'm William.
And this is episode what?
I don't know.
Come on, you're the one who remembers. I think it's 23. So yes, this is the episode that is really going to slow down Jim Carrey's career. But eventually, he'll come back with a Penguin movie.
How's that going for him, by the way?
The Penguin movie's come and gone, hasn't it?
I don't know. I wasn't interested in it at all.
No.
It didn't look...
My wife was for like a second in the trailer. She's like, I might kind of want to see that. I'm like, wait for it. And then by the end, she knew. We don't want to see that. But it's for kids, so, you know, kids are stupid.
That wasn't very nice.
No, but kids are too stupid to care, so. Well, I don't think we have any kids that listen. Yeah. Welcome back, because we weren't here last week. And I forgot to remind William not to show up, and I was worried he was here, because I wasn't here.
No, I...
He assures me.
I remembered.
He did not show up at my house. So, we're once again live, people. This is live. Other than the intro and the outro, we did not record any of this. We are recording it now, live, for us.
So, when it's posted on Thursday evening, it's fresh...
Yeah, for you guys it'll be recorded, but for us it's live, so it's very exciting. I hate recording my own pre-recorded...
Recordings?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
We just sit here with two with two dictaphones and just play it back. So...
Are you going to ask me how my 2 weeks were?
Yes, how were your 2 weeks?
I'm trying to think of...
Anything?
Anything. Well, we finished the cooperative part of Portal 2.
Oh, yay!
And that was fun.
Yeah, William just recently sort of discovered Portal. Yeah. Trish even more recently has discovered. She hadn't played it yet, but she's thinking about it now.
And let's see. Oh gosh, I think we've seen Harry Potter in the intervening weeks.
The last one.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
It was all right.
You know how you make it much better?
No.
You watch the second to last one 2 days before.
Well, I think we watched it just the day before, even.
Second to last one sucks.
Oh.
Makes the last one look much better.
Well, you know...
But that's kind of how that book was. First half of that book was really boring.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it's just kids in the woods being angsty for like 500 pages.
Oh, yeah, like the second to the last movie was.
Exactly! Ugh.
I did kind of wonder in Deathly Hallows Part 1 if the book was like that, because it seemed like the film was... You were just sitting around waiting for things to happen.
That's why I was surprised they made... When I heard they were going to make it into two movies, I'm like, I read that book. Sure, it's bigger, but nothing happens. It's not worth two movies. And sure enough, it's not. But second movie I thought made up for it, and that shit happened, so it was entertaining. I'm mostly just glad it's done.
Well, it was done when the book was done, really. I mean,
no, but we had to finish out the movie. I mean,
yeah, but nobody who cares was surprised by the ending.
No, but they had done, honestly, they had done fairly good jobs compared to a lot of them of bringing books to film, in my opinion. And so I had to, I mean, I wasn't not going to see the last movies. But now it's like Star Wars. It's like, I did it. I took something from it. I have grown in my concept of genre fiction. And now I can move on and never read or see Harry Potter again. And that's fine.
Did you see it in the last 2 weeks?
Yes.
Oh, you saw it.
Yes, this weekend. We saw it Friday night. We watched on pay-per-view the...
Okay.
That movie, because we hadn't seen it yet. And then Sunday we saw the one that's out right now.
What I haven't seen that I, you know, still want to is Captain America. Unless that's not very good.
Saw it yesterday.
Oh, is that good?
It's hard to be objective.
Why?
Because the main thing I can say about it is a billion times better than any other comic book movie I have seen this year.
Yeah, that's not saying a lot.
Exactly. That is a low bar. But I really enjoyed it because it was so much better than those.
Okay.
I think it's decent. I think it's quite decent. It's not into that rarefied air we've talked about of, you know, the Iron Man ones and the Dark Knight
ones. Because nobody's talking about it, really.
But,
I haven't heard anyone talk about it.
But it might be right below those. Here's the deal. It's very straightforward. Like, it's decent. And they worked with decent. This is, like, the story? Not a great story. Not even a very good story. An okay story. Mm-hmm. And that's way better than any of these damn movies have done in a long time. Yeah. It has Nazis. It's set in the 40s. The Nazis have laser guns. It's fun. The movie has very distinct acts. That's fun. Has really cool special effects. And I don't say that because there's big exciting shit. I mean, they did cool stuff. Like, where they have the scrawny version of him before he comes to Captain America. That's really cool.
Was it? Because, you know, in the previews, I didn't find that very
There's
convincing.
A little uncanny valley. It's not perfect.
Yeah.
But it's way better than I would have thought. I was very impressed. Because you see it for quite a while, and you get very used to it.
Oh, I see.
It has really good actors doing good. I mean, it's got Stanley Tucci. It's got Tommy Lee Jones. It's got Hugo Weaving. I did not know these people were in this.
Yeah, now, what I'm curious about is why did they cast that guy to play Captain America when he's Johnny in Fantastic Four? Why did they do that? They're not going to do Fantastic Four anymore?
Oh, God, I hope not. I didn't even see the second one.
Oh, so maybe they'll reboot it or something?
Yeah.
Or they'll just leave probably. That property alone because they don't think it's...
We saw the trailer for the reboot. Of Spider-Man.
Oh. Huh. Well, that's... I kind of want to... what's it?
I'm sure I'll see it.
I think I've seen the trailer online.
It's
kind of more like the original, where he has a little thing to sling webs with. He doesn't have...
No, I think he does, because in the trailer, he pulls webbing out of his neck.
Oh, he does?
Yes. But then later, we see him shooting it from his arm, so... I don't know if he pulls it around his shoulder or what. but I don't know, yeah. We get more into his parents, and then he has to live with his aunt and uncle. It's weird. But, and end of the credits of Captain America is... It's kind of a teaser trailer, but there's stuff in it for Avengers movie.
Right, right.
Which was cool.
No, of course they're going
to
do that.
Yeah, obviously. But they do it like an honest-to-goodness trailer, and so there's quite a bit of things in it and stuff.
Oh, okay.
And that was fun. I would say go see Captain America.
Yeah, I want to, but I don't know if I'm gonna make it.
It's good. It's good. It's not great. It's not on par with the really impressive ones, but it's good. And major character in it, Howard Stark.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is neat.
Yeah.
Because I had no idea that was gonna be in there, but yeah, Tony Stark's dad is very involved, and that was very fun to see that. And good, and yeah, and it has, I mean, I don't know a lot about Captain America, but I do know there's a lot of references in it. Like they just, the way AV Club put it is, they just had the checklist of how to make a superhero movie fun for everybody, and they stuck to it. And that's the thing, is it's competent. It's a competent superhero movie, and that hasn't happened in so damn long.
Yeah. No, that's true.
So yeah, it was definitely worth it to me. Didn't see Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, yeah, I haven't seen that either. But tempting. I heard it was really good.
Well, no, here's the thing. I don't hear it's really good.
Really?
What I hear from people is, oh my God, it's actually good.
Oh, really? I thought it would be good.
Did you see the previous Planet of the Apes? Did you see the Mark Wahlberg one?
Yeah, but I wasn't thinking it would be anything like that. I mean, I saw the previews and it looked good to me.
Yeah. See, people have it too tied to that one. And actually, talking with somebody about that, it can't be a prequel to that one. Because that one, we're in space, it's in the far future, and apes haven't taken over the planet yet. So clearly it's not the same continuity.
No.
But I think that one was so atrocious that people were worried about this one. And then they're like, actually, it's decent.
I actually have kind of high hopes for it.
Maybe they're going to make another one.
Maybe I'll be disappointed. I don't know.
Yeah, we saw a very, very long trailer, more than I had seen before in this one, which made me even more interested. I don't know that we'll see it in the theater, though. Because I think next I have one more date night coming up here, and I think we're going to go see Fright Night.
Oh, really?
Yeah, got to see that.
Okay. I don't know if I'm going to see that one at all, but...
Loved the original. Like, as a ridiculousness thing. And this one apparently is sort of keeping to the sort of campy feel.
Oh.
And David Tennant playing a Vegas-style Chris Angel-type magician who takes the place basically of Roddy McDowell's character in the first one.
Hmm.
He's the sort of mentor guy who helps him kill vampires. I'm like, oh, holy shit, yeah.
Okay, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe
I think it's going to be cute. So I think we may have to go see that one. But we'll see.
What about... What else in your 2 weeks?
Oh, I've done tons of stuff.
Really?
Yes. I had my Vampire LARP, and I took Stu with me.
You did?
I don't know if Stu still listens, but yeah. He had been talking about it before, and apparently he hadn't realized it was... He thought it was a LARP, like... foam swords on the football field kind of LARP.
Oh, yeah.
And so then he found out it was a vampire thing, and I was like, yeah, it's totally different. And he's no familiarity with the game that it's based off of.
Okay.
So I had to tell him some stuff, and then we went out and had dinner beforehand, and so I had to brief him on everything. And he went, and he seemed to really, really enjoy it. And I think he'd like to do it. I don't know if he will, because he has, you know, a 3-year-old and a 9-year-old at home, and, you know, I don't know that... Well, he said this was, like, the first time he'd been out in, like, 3 years, like, just out with a friend.
Mm.
So I don't know that he'll be able to, but he thought it was a blast. He had a great time. And it was very fun. Raven was there, too.
Who?
The storyteller's wife, who's the one who I worked with. That's how I got into this.
Oh.
She was there, and she hung out with, and she knew him, so that was handy. They just sort of chat, because, I mean, he just sat around and watched us, but he said there was more acting involved than he expected, which I think...
What does that mean, exactly?
Well, I think it may tie into certain things, like a bunch of shit happened in the LARP, and then everybody left the room except me and this one other guy, and we just had this long conversation as characters about stuff that, like, didn't do anything, didn't, you know, forward any plot lines or anything. We were just interacting as our characters, and I don't think he was necessarily expecting that.
Because
a lot of it is just sort of drama for drama's sake. But yeah, it was a very fun night, and he really enjoyed it.
Well, good.
And finally started on the character creation for my Traveler campaign.
But you haven't started the actual campaign.
No. In fact, next Tuesday we have to do more character creation because it's taken a long time. But it's a blast. It's its own sort of mini game. I think I've told you before, like, you come up with some stats and you come up with some basics about where you, what world you grew up on, and then you're an 18-year-old. And then you choose a career path and you roll to see if you can actually succeed in the career path, and then based on that you get skills, and then whether or not you survive in that career or whether you wash out, and then what happens to you during that career. And it's all these random roles. And you keep doing that until you decide your character is old enough. And each term is 4 years.
Hmm.
And so you do that until you decide your character is old enough and ready to start the game. And so all four of us, and we're doing it together, because you also build connections to characters at that time. So they're all doing it together. And it's really fascinating to see. You get these really complex stories that wouldn't necessarily exist otherwise. Everybody right now is 34. They've all gone through 4 career terms.
Mm-hmm.
And it varies. Like, one of their characters, Dan's character, is a doctor. And he's been a doctor for all 16 years.
Wow.
And, you know, some things have happened to him, but not much. He's had a fairly stable career, and he's sticking with it at this point. He's like, this is being really successful. I'm going to get, at the end of this, I'm going to get a lot of good benefits, money, and equipment and stuff out of this, so I'm sticking with this career. Meanwhile, Ben, who's the guy I had not ever game with before, and that was so cool. He showed up, and he had his character background. It wasn't just, this is the world I grew up, like, he had this whole elaborate thing where he had been raised in the mines to work as a slave until he was five, and then he went to, like, this whole elaborate thing. I'm like, oh, man, this is awesome. But so his character spends 8 years as a spy, and then basically has a undercover job go down really bad, and gets seriously injured. It's not specific. He gets to sort of decide, but it took his dexterity. He was a fairly dexterous character down to, like, really pathetic dexterity now.
Oh, wow.
Like, I kept theorizing he walks with a cane now. And so got drummed out of that, decided he was going to go into the Merchant Marines, got in, and immediately war got declared along the trade path he was working, and so he had to flee.
Jeez.
And now has decided to become a field researcher. And so far, he's doing well with that. yeah, and like,
sounds like you're talking about siblings. And so far, he's doing well with that.
And Lisa was a corporate espionage person for quite a while, and then she finally basically sold out her own company and left, and tried to get a job with the company that she sold them out for, and failed, and so gave up and applied to the military draft, and is now in the Marines. I don't know how that's going to go.
Wow.
And yeah, and Cheryl was a scout for a long time until she had some injury and hung out with actually this doctor that Dan is playing, and he convinced her sort of to look at more scholarly stuff, and so now she's been a field researcher for a while and doing well at that. But yeah, it's just amazing the shit that comes out of this and the skill sets that come out of it. It's really fascinating. And yeah, they don't want to stop yet. They're getting into the point where every term they have to roll aging to see like if they get... if they lose physical ability for being older and older.
Oh,
but they're still doing it at this point because it's fun. And I'm really hoping they take it for a way and become all these grizzled veterans that go out to this new frontier area. But we'll see. It's very fun. It may end up being funner than playing the game. We'll have to see. And this is where I blow your mind.
Okay.
So I'm actually going to share something personal that's not about consuming interesting media.
Whoa! Yeah. I don't know if we should go there. That's new territory.
A few weeks ago, my mother-in-law was diagnosed with breast cancer.
Oh, no.
And this was it. Yeah, this it was this Monday. She had surgery. The good news, the bad news is it was kind of a not happy kind of tumor. I forget all the details, but all the things that could be good or bad, most of them were bad.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is it was really tiny.
Mm.
And so she had surgery on Monday, and they got it, and they got lymph nodes, and they checked the initial check on the lymph nodes, they don't see anything.
Mm-hmm.
And she's recovering pretty well from the surgery. So far, things are looking decent.
Well, that's a relief.
It's been a little bit freaky.
Yeah.
Especially because we knew right before we left for Virginia.
Oh.
And so it was all kind of weird there. And on top of that, it's all weird for me because I'm having all these emotional things. And the way my family would deal with this kind of situation and the way Trisha's does is very different.
Oh, I see.
And so it's been very, I haven't wanted to push things on them and stuff. But
yeah, right.
I'm very close to my mother-in-law, so it's kind of been a thing. But she's doing well now. There, more tests will be coming back in a couple days, but the surgery at least went well. I think she's probably going to have some radiation. We don't know about chemo, and that's the part that's freaking me out a little bit, because I think that's going to be real rough.
Well, I hope she doesn't have to have that kind of thing.
So far, things are working good. Yeah, and I didn't mention it before, partially. Well, I actually asked her if she was okay with me mentioning it on the podcast first, because I'm like, you know,
this is her shit, not my shit. Before you, I think earlier you said there was something personal.
I may have.
Maybe you didn't say that in the air, I don't know.
But I never actually, that sounds familiar. But yeah, I didn't want to actually bring it up because it's, you know, her shit. But I did ask her and she said that's fine, so. So in general I'm considering that a good thing for the last couple of weeks because the surgery went well and all that, so. It's been a very eventful couple of weeks for me.
I guess so.
Yeah. All you did was see a Harry Potter movie. Did you work on the book?
I worked on... there's a couple other projects I'm working on. I'm still waiting for one of my editors to get back to me on some stuff.
Oh, okay. I had this sudden urge... Oh, my goodness. Please tell me we didn't just shut down. We didn't shut down. Okay, good. I'm going to fix the settings here because it's trying to freak me out.
Urge to what?
To read... your first book again. Something I recently was dealing with reminded me of the Twilight Nurse concept of angels.
Well, that comes out more in the second book, really.
Yeah, it was cooler in the first book, though.
Okay.
I noticed when I was reading the first book especially, and this may be because of your filmmaker-ness stuff, your books would really translate well to film.
Well, I've been told...
I can very clearly see them
in film. I've been told that before. In fact, one criticism of the first two books is they almost read like screenplays instead of novels, which I don't really take as a bad thing necessarily.
It makes them very easy to read.
Yeah.
They're very easily digestible.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. When I write a book, you know, I do have a very particular sensitivity or how do I say it? I feel like I'm telling the story, and I'm almost trying to simulate the experience of hearing it verbally. You know, so I avoid, and that way they're not really very literary, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Especially
with your first book, I referred to it as a very sort of minimalist style.
Yeah, which I, you know, even in the third one, where now that I'm working on my third one and I have a little bit better handle on what it is I'm trying to accomplish in a broader sense, it's a lot different than the first one, but it's still very stark. I mean, one of my editors, you know, pointed that out, that I, even though you could see I've matured as a writer, I still stick with that general, like you said, minimalist kind of approach.
You write to communicate, not necessarily, I mean, for a lot of authors, there's evocative and artistic and craft questions more in terms of wording.
Yeah.
Yours tends to be very much, how do I get the situation across?
Yes, and move on to the next
thing. which is not a bad thing, but yeah, it is much more, it's much more a filmmaker style.
Well, and I also like to think of what I do as kind of, you know, I don't really aspire to do anything more than write a dime store novel kind of thing. I mean, I'm not trying to...
You need more purple prose.
Well,
and to get more lurid in your adjectives.
Not dime store in the sense of pulp, but dime store in the sense of, you know,
very little profit.
In the sense of this, you read it and you, it's entertaining, but you know it's not high art, and it's probably something that the author could crank out in, you know, a few months. And
but you really can't.
No, I can't, but I don't mind if...
But the author could. Wait, yeah. What? I've never seen you and Clifton D. Hawk photographed together.
The truth is, I did take a month to actually, you know, write the first draft, so it really isn't...
The rough draft?
The rough draft. It really isn't that hard to write, and the changes I've made since then, since I've gotten some feedback, have not been huge, and they probably won't be, so... So, you know, it's, like I say, it's not high art. I don't really intend it to be. I just want to, but for whatever reason, these stories get in my head, and I'm really uncomfortable and unhappy until I get them out. For whatever reason, I don't know.
I feel the same way about the voices.
Well, everything creative thing I do is like that. I can't explain it. I hear other people talk about creative things they do, and it seems more thought out or deliberate or something. For me, it's...
More just like vomiting?
No, not vomiting. More, it's a compulsion or something, you know. You get something stuck in there and you have to do something about it, and what you do isn't nearly as good as what was going on in your head, but you can get it to a point where it's good enough where you can say, okay, I can forget about it now, and you can move on to something else. And just when you think that whole process will stop and that maybe, you know, you're done doing stuff and you can move on to something else, well, then some new thing pops up in there and it's like you're a slave to it in a way. I don't really know how to describe it.
I think this is not an uncommon condition. I think most people just masturbate.
Okay. I think it's time to go to that.
We killed over 25 minutes in our very serious talk. I may do it. Trish said when she found out I was going to talk about her mom's cancer, she'd call it a very special episode.
Well, we already had a very special episode.
Did we?
Maybe
we had
not.
A proper episode.
Well,
yeah, I got on a big episode kick for a while.
We joked it was a very special episode. Because I don't remember what it was we were talking about.
Well, we had the greatest episode ever.
No, there was something else. We called it a very special episode because we were talking about a topic we were talking about was a heavy topic. But it wasn't like you were just
cancer.
Talking about. Well, it was probably
masturbation.
It was probably as heavy as a topic as cancer, but it wasn't something that involved someone we knew.
Okay.
And
this wasn't the one where you saw the guy and thought he was in jail.
No, that was.
Because that was different, too.
That wasn't the one.
That was not so special. Okay.
You're never going to let me forget that, are you?
No, it's recorded. The internet will never let you forget that. It's out there. For those of you just joining us, we have a hat, and it's magical. Doesn't talk. But checks its own email. So people email the hat, and we get it from the hat, drawn randomly. And we talk about it until we're sick of talking about it.
Well, we think it's random anyway. It's random to us.
That
the hat might have an agenda.
Secret hat algorithms.
Like the time with the door.
That was fucking hilarious. And all Bloodsbear had to say was apparently it was a Craig Ferguson reference. Which it is, because he'll do the doorbell and say, "Who's that at the door?" And somebody comes in.
Oh.
Usually when he's doing emails. So, there you go.
The hat watches Craig Ferguson?
No, apparently she was taking credit for that.
Oh,
one.
Okay.
I still don't know who it was, though, at the door. Anyway, if you would like to email the hat and stand just as much a chance as anybody else of getting on the show with that, email the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Try and keep it a little bit terse, you know. Keep it in the Twitter-sized range. 140, 145 characters would be awesome. Otherwise, it may be digested into something smaller and more easily magically written on a half of a 3x5 card. So really a 3x2.5 card. And what's our first question, topic, thing?
This is from our good friend Mark.
Mark
McKibben,
long-term listener, hard hat extraordinaire, hard hat number one. Almost say, not me, but somebody might.
William, this is addressed specifically to me.
Oh my goodness!
Have you ever considered joining a writers group to help out with your book?
Well, interestingly, on topic,
the hat sometimes does that.
Uh-huh.
Well, I have not joined a group, but I have considered it, and this question has been asked of me many times by other people, particularly people who have done this and got a lot of good out of it. I am not averse to this kind of thing, but it's just I've never really had the opportunity. And well, people will say...
Even in Iowa City, you totally had the opportunity.
Opportunity, I mean, not that there aren't any around here. Of course, there are, but... But opportunity is in, you know, it would involve me waking up one day and saying, oh, hey, I'm going to do this, and doing a lot of work to find out where they are and make contact with a person. And it's just, you know, I just haven't, that's not happened to me. You know, I don't, as soon as someone suggests this to me, I'll think about it for a little while and then I'll forget about it and I won't even consider it again.
What are you, me?
Well, it's just, No, you know me. I don't really have a great memory the way it is. I would have to, like, right
oh,
now.
Oh, so you're not claiming laziness. You're claiming forgetfulness.
Oh, yeah. Like,
it's like you would do this tomorrow morning, but you're going to forget by then.
Well, I don't know if I'd do it tomorrow morning, because tomorrow morning...
You will have forgotten.
Well, not just... It's not as simple as just forgetting. It's like, let's say, okay, here I have
you
this...
You need to remember when you don't have shit to do.
Yeah, exactly. Here I have this card, and ideally, I would go, yes, that's right, I was going to do that. I would write it down in some kind of planner, and when I get up in the morning, I would, you know, check my planner and stuff, but I don't do the planner thing anymore, and so I'm very easily distracted by whatever else is going on in my life. So even if I wrote it on, if I took this card and I said, well, I remember because of this card, the card will get buried under other cards or Post-its or whatever. So I just...
Stephen Covey is rolling in whatever fancy car he has because he made all the damn money. He's not dead yet, right? So he's just making money. He's rolling around in that car. You were his acolyte, William. You made me read the damn Seven Habits of Highly Effective People.
I thought it had some merit. It had some problems, but here's the thing. Obviously, if any part of me thought, yeah, I've got to do this, this is something I really need to do and it's really going to help, then the card wouldn't get buried. You know what I'm trying to say? So
you forget. Because you want to forget.
I forget because
you hate it.
It's a
terrible suggestion, Mark, is what he's saying.
It's a priority thing, right? Like, I might be thinking, okay, so, oh, but this is going to be meeting every Wednesday night or something. Dude, can I really afford, you know, meeting somewhere Wednesday? I mean, you know what it's like. You've asked me to do things on Tuesday nights
or
whatever.
I know. You don't do shit,
well,
and you're busy every night.
Yeah, pretty much. So
I don't know how that
now,
works.
Now, it doesn't have to be like that. I could say, well, I'll just take this one thing and make it a lower priority and make this a higher priority, but obviously I'm not interested in doing that. Mostly because the things I'm doing every other night are family-oriented things, and you know, I just feel like, you know, the kids at home are both in high school now, and it seems like it's weird. I thought it would be like when I was growing up. Where, stop it. Where when the kids become teenagers, as far as the parents are concerned, there's less to do. But it's not like that at all. There's actually more to do.
Yes.
And you know, when someone says, well, can you do something Wednesday night? It might be completely free in a way, but then you have to think, oh, wait a minute. You know, someone's having an exam that day or the next day, and I need to make sure they study or help them study. You know, you just have to think of a thousand different things because somehow there's like a curve or something, right? It's like when they're little, they can't even figure out how to take care of themselves, of course. But then they come to a point where they really want to do everything themselves, and they get pretty independent. But then they get tired of that, or they start to think it's lame or not cool, and so they stop doing things for themselves, and you literally have to watch them all the time to say, wait, you know, aren't you going to brush your teeth, or, you know, how many days has it been since you took a shower? I mean, you know, stuff like that. It's crazy. Or don't you think you should do your homework right now? Instead of, you know, stuff that you just, their brains just, it's like they regress or something. I don't know. So
their brains are different. Somebody did a study. Teenagers' brain chemistry is not the same as anybody else in any phase of life.
And it's not so bad, but you do think about your life differently. You know, like, well, I really probably should make sure I keep this. And you're always glad you did, that you kept this evening open, or that even better than that, which is what we do, is you actually try to plan something each evening so that they're prepared for it. You know, so that you can, it's weird to say, but to give some structure to their lives, which I know it sounds like I'm talking about toddlers, but I'm not. I'm talking about teenagers.
William, this is a youth thing.
This completely surprises me.
To me and all the listeners, we're like, yeah, they're teenagers.
Yeah, but, you know, I grew up, and this wasn't just me, no. No, come on. This wasn't just me, because where I grew up, you know, and this was a small town in Iowa, you know, like 1,000 people, you know. My graduating class had 32 people in it, and that was a large class. And this was in, you know, this was throughout the 70s and the 80s. I graduated in 87. And it was pretty typical for you to learn how to drive when you were like, I don't know, 13 or something. And you would drive around on the farm, you know. Now they have this rule in Iowa that before you can get a driver's license, you have to have 24 hours of driving under your belt or something. When I was growing up, everyone pretty much assumed that was going to happen because you probably grew up on a farm and you probably had been driving for years before you got your license. You know, kids farming by themselves, doing chores by themselves. There's a lot of independence among the teenagers. Now, yes, a lot of teenagers were doing things that I didn't do, but a lot of them weren't doing those things. Just a lot of maturity and independence among the, you know, farm kids.
I'm willing to acknowledge that my concept that there is generality, that no generality applies to you, may actually extend that no generality applies to anybody who grew up in your little hick village. Because I've only met one other person from your little hick village. However, he fits generalizations better than you do.
Well, but he's not from there.
Well, there we go then.
He came like when he was a sophomore in high school.
Well, there we go then. Then it could be your little hick village. I mean, it might not just be you.
And that's not to say that there weren't, you know, people.
It doesn't extend beyond your hick village. This is what I'm saying.
Well, no, because we knew kids in other towns that were nearby.
I don't think you really did. I don't think you knew these kids as well as you think you knew these kids.
I just think that, I don't know, my parents, when we were teenagers, and I've checked with my mom about this, by the way, before she passed away. I often would ask, was it like this? Did you worry about us constantly when we were teenagers? She said, no. We never, you know, you guys, we knew what you were about, who you were. We knew you would make good decisions and choices. You asked us if you wanted to go somewhere, and that was more just so we'd know where the car went, not because we, you know, needed to think if we trusted you to do it. Whatever, you know, it was, I don't know. It was,
Yes, and that's the weird version. The stuff your kids do, that's pretty normal.
Well, I've noticed that with, like, other kids they're going to school with and stuff like that.
And that's how you survive. You look at your kids and say, at least they're not those kids over there.
Well, except that I do see really mature kids that they know that...
damn.
And they're not anything like them for some reason that I can't figure out.
Try and avoid those kids.
I don't want to avoid those kids.
I fortunately had friends that my mother actually went so far for a little while as to actually forbid me from seeing this one kid out of school. Hmm. The final straw was when he taught me how to spray hairspray on candles.
That's very dangerous.
It was fun, though. Yes, it was terribly dangerous. So then she decided. Eventually, she relented years later. But.
Well, I'm sure you've probably already figured this out, but us kids in my family, we were the ones that parents were often saying, well, why don't you hang out with those nice, right kids?
If only they knew.
Well, and
I still have this weird theory that your parents actually were part of an elaborate thousands-year-old breeding program.
Well, that's possible, but
called Project Manticore.
Well, one guy who decided very, you know, I think he was a junior or senior, he realized he had a drinking problem, and he would deliberately plan evenings with me and my brother because he knew we didn't drink, and so he could, you know. And that only happened a few times, though. Otherwise, he was...
Because he realized it was really boring.
No, I think he had a good time. It's just it was just us, right? I mean, he had other friends he wanted to see and spend time with, and occasionally he'd invite them along with us, and we'd all have a great time and everything, but there were other people that would never go out on the town with, you know, him and the right boys who didn't drink and weren't going to be okay.
They didn't call you the right brothers? That would have been cooler.
I don't remember. But, you know, there's four of us boys and a girl. And
did you ever have your own family band?
No.
You should have.
We pretty much all had the same reputation. In fact, one time, it was the first... When I was in school, well, I was after my time, really. It got pretty popular to have after prom parties. Like, I mean,
after prom.
Well, there's always been parties after prom, but where like a parent group would sponsor.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean.
We had a graduation night, one of those was a lock-in thing.
Yeah, right. So, yeah. That kind of thing. That kind of started going on, you know, during my years and a little bit after. And when my sister was a junior, the parents who organized these things decided they were going to have like a casino night. Well, with fake cocktails and stuff, my dad was completely against that. You know, because we were raised in the old Methodist way, no alcohol, no gambling, whatever. And so he was against it, and I couldn't tell if Heidi was against it or if she just thought she needed to be against it because Dad was. I think she was probably against it too. But she got a real hard, you know, really, was really raked over the coals for it. So yeah, I mean, we didn't exactly fit in to that community perfectly or anything, but, you know, kids had to farm. They had to be responsible for things. They had to take the wagons into town and you know, unload the grain into the co-op and sign papers.
Your kids didn't farm, did they?
Well, no, but...
See? That's the problem. I have a question to ask you, William.
What's that?
Are you Ned Flanders?
No.
Okay. I have another question to ask you. Is the character of Ned Flanders based on you?
No.
Maybe on your dad? Are you Rod or Todd Flanders?
No.
Are you Maud Flanders?
No. We're not Flanders related. You know, interestingly, we weren't...
Do you ever say diddly?
No. That whole hyper-religiosity kind of thing, that wasn't really our deal. Yeah, we went to church every Sunday, and Dad made sure we sat in the front pew and all that stuff. But we weren't like... He'd make fun of people who were really strongly, you know... He called them holy rollers, and that wasn't my dad.
Sounds like you had a vaguely psychotic upbringing.
No, I mean, it was all about being decent to people, and you know, as far as alcohol was concerned, you just... He had an uncle who was an alcoholic and who was terrible to his family, and you know, he saw a real disconnect between drinking or having a lifestyle where you drank a lot and having the capacity to be decent to people when you needed to be. And you know, that just led him to think, you know, just don't even start, don't even go down that road.
My dad was worried when I started drinking because his dad was a raging alcoholic for decades and eventually died of it, I think. So he was worried because, you know, genetic tendency and stuff like that.
Yeah, well,
And I can see it because I have an addictive personality, and it's arguable that sometimes in college there may have been some signs of addiction. I mean, I don't have any to this day, but...
Well,
I could see why he was concerned.
Well, yeah, and not just alcohol, obviously, cigarettes and drugs, whatever. I mean, everything, and also gambling, the same thing, because he saw it as an addictive behavior where you're just throwing your money away, and you know, it was like I said, it's the old Methodist way, and that's how he raised us, and as for our part, and this is something people didn't understand about us. People thought that we believed these things or acted like we believed them because they made us or something. But that's not the case at all. I mean, our parents, when they shared these beliefs of theirs, they explained to us why they had them, and they you know, said, well, you guys are going to have to make up your own minds. And we did. And generally we said, yeah, that makes sense to us. And so none of us have ever had any alcohol or drugs or cigarettes or anything like that. Although, and none of us really get into gambling either, although... everyone else in the family but me will buy a lottery ticket, you know, when it's the jackpot's high, but which bothers Dad a lot.
You.
Dad doesn't like that, but I don't do that either. So it's just, you know, you just raise a certain way, and as we've talked about this before, if you go back far enough, you know, that's, like I said, it's the old Methodist way, so you could find other Methodists who were like that if you go back, you know, to the...
I should never to go back and find Methodists. I found Trish, and that's as far as it got. So, good question, Mark.
Yeah, sorry.
In answer to your question, old Methodist way. It's the old Methodist way not to write with other people.
I realize it's a good idea, and maybe...
But not good enough to warrant doing.
No, wait, I just... My priorities right now are just kind of...
So, once his children have been killed... he'll do it.
Something like that.
Okay. 45 minutes.
No way.
Yes. This is definitely a very special episode.
I'm sorry.
No, it's awesome.
I didn't mean to get into a whole bunch
we
of...
We need theme music and stuff. Dude, I brought cancer to the party, so...
Crazy stuff.
I still win.
I am very
none
relieved.
None of your old Methodist talk beats my cancer.
I'm very relieved to find out that things are, you know, positive as far as the surgery and everything. I hope that...
And
continues.
I'm very relieved to learn that farming makes for good, hard-working teenagers.
I think it does.
And...
For the most part.
Just
anyway.
To bring our serious, heartfelt party to a close, we have a question from Azure Talon.
Well?
I hate it.
You want to draw another one? We've never done that before.
I don't think we can set that precedent.
And the hat might really get mad. You don't.
And people stop
foot.
Sending. I mean, we got to stick to our guns. You know, yeah. We're going to do it.
Okay.
Y'all get to decide how the show goes, even when this is what you decide. Dear MTH.
Magical talk.
No, the. Still not very respectful.
Doesn't
Blue
do that.
Claw.
Doesn't do that.
On a scale of 1 to 7, 3 being purple, are cats totally evil or just mostly evil? Signed, Azure Talon. Cats are fairly evil, but they're definitely not totally evil. I'd go with purple, I think.
I'd go with none of the above. I don't think cats are morally culpable. Actually,
I think that might be the best answer, is they are amoral.
Yeah.
Which
translates to humans, I suppose, as evil
sometimes.
I don't sometimes.
Know, though, because cats are definitely capable of malice.
Well, yeah, they when they catch a mouse, they play with it before they kill it. I mean, that's cruel.
Yeah.
I mean, but you know, again, is the cat really aware that, I'm making this thing suffer before I kill it? And is the mouse really aware, good gracious, this thing is torturing me before I kill it. I mean, probably not.
This monster that's going to eat me is kind of a dick.
Exactly. Wait,
you see Ezzy?
Yeah.
Isn't she cute?
Yes, she's very cute.
She got her paw over her nose while she's sleeping. Meanwhile, Twiglet here is just clogging up the fan on the computer. They're both going to blow up. That's pretty evil.
But see, it isn't at all evil. It's just... You know, it's evil to you. You're kind of projecting your own morality and, you know, anthropomorphizing your cats, which is what people do, I guess.
I never anthropomorphize my cat, do I, Twiglet?
No, you don't. Never.
So I would say that the question doesn't really apply to cats. Now
the question about cats doesn't apply to cats.
About them being evils. I mean, the question of evilness cannot really be applied to cats, I don't think.
So, what he's saying is, fuck you, Azure Talon. Fuck you in your stupid face.
I'm not saying that at all. Now,
replay
cats,
the tape, people. You'll see that's what he's saying.
Can cats seem evil because they do something that really messes up your day? Sure. But is messing up your day really evil? Come on.
But the cat's plan is ineffable, so we are not to question it. Did somebody just shoot a gun outside?
It was probably a cat working some evil.
Working at evil. Cat with a gun. Oh, my God. You ever seen laser cats?
No.
Oh, God.
Speaking of lasers, did you say the Nazis have lasers in
laser guns.
Why? Yeah. How does that work?
You'll see.
But they didn't have laser guns.
No, they don't start off with them.
Oh.
Like, hijinks ensue.
I see. Well,
they don't just have it such as, oh, Nazis, laser guns. No. Like, it's a plot point that they have laser guns. All right,
well, we only got to two questions this week.
We're not that. We can get another one in here.
You think?
We only hit 50 minutes.
Okay. But you usually like to fill the last 10 minutes with stuff.
What stuff?
I don't know.
Not 10 minutes.
Your stuff.
That's too much.
Okay. What do I know?
Nothing. What, have you not been here for 2 weeks? It seems long. Every time we go without for a week, it seems very long in between.
Jib.
Hey, Jib.
Asks, what is your preferred method of home defense and why? Discuss. Cheers, Jib says. I like that. Well, yours is evil cats, I think.
No.
Oh.
My preferred method of defending my home is to not have anything that people would want.
Well, the best defense is a good offense, I guess.
That I'd think of as camouflage. Or just really having no value. I mean...
Well, I feel a little strange about announcing on the air what my preferred method of home defense is, so I think I'm going
to... Trap door.
I think I'm going to pass.
Alligator pit.
I think I'm going to pass because... That seems to be...
Come on, tell us your alarm code.
That's a security breach, I think.
What he's saying, listeners, is you're not cleared for that information.
Jib, you do not have clearance. It's on a need-to-know basis, and you do not need to know.
I don't know, I have a...
Hold on a second.
Inside my door. It doesn't say what you have.
Jib is asking this question, you know.
Is he casing the place?
Yeah.
He's from Alabama.
So what is that?
I don't know. I'm just saying that.
It doesn't have anything to do with
it. You can draw your own conclusions at that point. It could have to do with the type of person he is. It could have to do with the fact that it would be a long way for him to drive to steal our shit.
Alabama. Well, okay. Jib, let me tell a little story here that I hope you don't find offensive.
Come listen to a story about a man named Jib.
that I hope you don't find offensive.
I hope you do.
In fact, I hope you relate. Even though the people I'm about to talk about don't live as far south as you do, I think they probably have a similar sentiment regarding home defense.
I'm already offended.
All right, so it's in southeastern Ohio, but it might just as well be West Virginia. I mean, it's in the Appalachian Mountains.
Mama.
Right, where some of my... relatives
take me home.
Where some of my relatives are from.
Well, yeah, you hillbillies.
Right. And we were visiting there.
And your name is Billy. Hillbilly.
We were visiting there, and they were talking about their guns. They were showing... one of the things they were doing was showing some of the cabinets and things they made that were like a jewelry box or like a curio or wardrobe that had secret compartments wherein you can put your gun.
Sweet.
And they were talking about this and all the places they had their guns and guns underneath their pillows and everything like that, and how they had these interesting expensive lock mechanisms on their outbuildings and all this stuff. And they did talk about guns a lot in a hunting context and whatever, but they also really liked to talk about their preferred methods of home defense.
Ah, yes.
Which, in this case, was guns. And what kind of gun they had, what, you know, rifles, shotguns, yes. Various handguns.
Did any of them have Gunderwear?
No.
Have you seen the thing for Gunderwear?
No.
Holy crap, it's awesome. It's underwear that, like, is built to hold your gun.
Oh, okay.
There's YouTube videos. It's hilarious.
So, after hearing them talk about all of this and how much time they put into finding places to conceal guns all over their house, okay, and to secure their belongings in sheds and things.
Wait, I know where this is going.
I asked them. I think I've told you this story before. I asked them. So, is crime a problem here? You guys seem to be really concerned about home defense. So, is the crime rate alarm you here or something? Oh, no, why would you ask that, they said.
Oh, that's not where I was expecting.
Just like, they didn't even know why I was asking such a ridiculous question.
Well, because obviously crime's not a problem, because obviously they're very open about the fact that they got billion and a half guns, who the hell would try and break in?
That's the conclusion one would draw. But then you might think, well, no, of course we don't, because didn't you hear us talking about all our guns? But it didn't even say that. It was like they couldn't even figure out the logical connection I was making between all of the places they were hiding guns in their house and the crime rate. But there obviously is a connection, which is nobody's going to rob these people.
Unless they want their guns.
Yeah. Now,
I thought the story was going to end with the fact that none of them were loaded.
Oh, no, no.
Because that would be dangerous.
Oh, I know. I think they are loaded. But these are my relatives who still live in the hills, and I presume that if I still had relatives that lived in East Tennessee and in the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia and all the other places where my hillbilly relatives come from, they would probably be very similar in their opinions about home defense and guns and whatnot. And I wonder, I just wonder if our friend Jib here, also coming from the South, was actually his way of asking us about our, preferred guns.
Which you gun nut, Jib? Is that what it is? No, I think William prefers his hillbilly magic to guns. I have never and will never touch a real gun.
No, we don't have any guns at our house.
I can't, and I'm not saying that I think guns should be outlawed. It has nothing to do with my political position on guns. In fact, here's the thing. In a theoretical sense, I think guns are awesome. Like with role-playing games and stuff, I get all into what guns my guys are carrying and like how much ammo and shit like that. I think it's awesome. In real life, on a very deep sort of existential, almost spiritual level, guns frighten and disturb me because they seem so unfair. They seem so over the top in that, 90-pound weakling and the guy who's been training in martial arts his whole life stand 20 feet away, and the guy could have a 22, and if he empties it, he could win real easily. And to me, it's just so unnatural that I'm scared to be near them, and I won't touch them. And generally, if somebody brings them into the room, I'd leave. If it's not loaded.
We have guns on the farm, and I think a couple of my brothers own some guns. And of course, we didn't hunt. My dad was really, I shouldn't say was, he's still alive. He's a very tender-hearted guy. He couldn't go out and kill something in a hunting context.
Yeah.
But we did fire guns at targets and whatnot. And when there was a rabid skunk in our barnyard once, he shot it right between the eyes without glasses on from like 100 yards. It was amazing.
He got it by smell.
With a 22. And most of the rifles we had were 22s because for the purposes we were going to use them for, I mean, we didn't need a higher caliber rifle. But I don't have a gun for home defense, and I don't think I would ever want a gun for that purpose. I might have a gun for other reasons, but not to defend myself. If someone was breaking into my house and I had a gun, first of all, it wouldn't be loaded, but if I thought I had time to load it or whatever, that's probably not even what I'd do. I'd grab a bat, or I'd try to surprise the guy. Or
hit him with the unloaded gun.
Well,
smack.
Shooting a person is just, I can't imagine doing that. I guess I just feel like there's probably other things I could do to disable or scare the guy away that, even if he had a gun, that I wouldn't have to have a gun myself or shoot at the person.
So there you go, Jib.
If your question was about guns, which maybe it wasn't, I don't know. But
you racist.
Does it really count when I'm from there? Kind of. Sort of. I know. I'm an island, but I was raised by hillbillies. Doesn't that count?
My sister married a guy who was born in Mexico, so apparently there's all kinds of stereotypes I'm allowed to make now.
Okay. Well, I want to thank Jib Algertalan and Mark McKibben for their questions, and sorry if we didn't answer them in the way
we do, but what you didn't realize is this episode was very special. It was about serious things like cancer, farming, masturbation, and rabid skunks. So, we hope you take a lot away from this and enrich your lives and the lives of others. If you'd like to find out more, go to your local library. No, also go to our blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. And post some comments there, because it's fun, and Mark will do it, and so the rest of you should do it, too. And check us out on Facebook. Magical Talking Cat is on Facebook. Like us. We're on iTunes. I know some of you people are getting this shit off of iTunes. So put some reviews on there. We still just have Azure Talon's little 3-star review hanging out there all lonely. So put some reviews. It will make us happy.
Yep.
And the hat won't eat us.
Yeah. I was just going to say something like that.
And I will try and remember to put the video, a video for Gunderwear. And
yeah,
what was
gosh,
the other...
make sure you do that.
It's hilarious.
I don't know.
There was another thing I asked you about a minute ago. I don't remember. We'll put Gunderwear up at least. Gunderwear is fun. So that's it from us here. Episode 23, I hope, because that's what I'm putting down. The very special cancer masturbation gun skunk episode. So, I've been Tony.
And I've been William.
And we'll talk to you again in a week. In the meantime, disregard the last little bit over an hour. All right.
Shot between the eyes? That must have been gross.
Well, I didn't really see it.